Now to the passing of a political giant. Raila Odinga, a towering figure in Kenyan politics, died on the 15th of October 2025 at the age of 80. A former prime minister and the son of Kenya's first vice president, Odinga also famously ran in every presidential election since 1997, bar one, although he'd never actually obtained the office of president. Since his passing, he's been hailed as a champion of Kenyan democracy, but also described as someone who went from hero to compromised insider. Joining me now to discuss the life and legacy of Raila Odinga is Kenyan political scientist Dr. Mutoni Wanyeki, who's also a former executive director of the Kenyan Human Rights Commission. Dr. Wanyeki joins us now from Nairobi, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Odinga was a storied name in Kenyan politics before Raila. Could we start by hearing a little bit about Raila Odinga's father's career and the impact that had in shaping Raila Odinga as a politician?
So Raila's father was Jaramogi Oginga Odinga, who was, as you've mentioned, our first vice president. He is infamous or famous for refusing to take political office before Kenyan independence until Jomo Kenyatta and the remaining Kamiguria Sikhs, the six most famous political detainees of the era, were freed. So Kenyatta eventually was freed. The Lancaster talks happened in the UK around Kenyan independence. We became independent and he became our first vice president. They fell out fairly soon after. Jaramogi came from the left and Kenyatta most decidedly was not from the left. Jaramogi was also from the sort of Pan-African school of thought, and Kenyatta was not that either. So Jaramogi formed what was called the Kenya People's Union, which was the last leftist party in Kenya, ended up being thrown out to government, detained, and so on. Fast forward to what was called the Second Liberation, which was the effort to bring back multi-party politics in Kenya. Jaramogi was the face of that initially, but died, and his son kind of took up the mantle.
I understand that Raila Odinga spent most of the 1980s in prison or detention. Why was that?
Well, he was definitely a sort of thorn in the side of the ruling Moi dictatorship. So he was detained several times. His wife went through hell during that detention. And he was released, then detained again, then threatened a third detention, and he went into exile. Mainly because, as I said, at that point, agitation had begun against the Moi dictatorship and against the dictatorship of the ruling party, the Kenya African National Union. And that resistance found form in the sort of battle for the second liberation and the desire to return Kenya to a multi-party democracy. But there were many other issues as well, human rights issues, separation of powers, over-concentration of executive powers, and so on. Raila was one of the key players. He wasn't the only player, but because of who he was and because of his struggle credentials at that point, the long periods of detention he had had, he was a very important figure. He was a very charismatic person as well and had huge followings.
Yeah, could you give us a sense of the scale of the turnout for people to view his body and honour him in death?
I mean, it began when, you know, the plane bringing his body back from India landed on last Wednesday. From the time that his death had been announced, followers had flooded the highway to the airport, the expressway to the airport. They ended up breaking through the barriers at the airport when the plane landed. Kenya Airways, who had brought his body back as soon as it entered Kenyan airspace, they changed their call sign to RAO 10. So there was a whole thing around the plane and RAO 001 has landed and they broke through the barriers. Then when that happened, people who were organizing the state funeral realized it would have been impossible to manage the crowds at the funeral home that they had intended. So they took the body to Kasarani instead to allow, and Kasarani is a football stadium, which gives you an indication of the scale of crowds expected. Again, people walked, ran, took buses, cars. I mean, Beaker Road, which is the road going to Kasarani, was just crowded. If you've seen the footage, it was wall-to-wall people and the stadium as well. Very unfortunately, undisciplined security services trying to maintain order within the stadium shot and killed four people. Yeah, that was horrible. Then same thing on Sunday when the burial happened in Bondo in Western Kenya. The crowds, I mean, people had come from all over. If you were an ordinary person, you couldn't even get near. I mean, they in the end decided to helicopter the body into Bondo where his father is buried because they realized they would never make it if they tried to drive the body from the closest city to the village. They would have been stopped by too many people.
On Sunday Extra, we are speaking about the passing of a towering figure of Kenyan politics, Raila Odinga, with political scientist Dr. Muthoni Wanyeki, who's a former executive director of the Kenyan Human Rights Commission. Muthoni, going back to Odinga's political career, as I said, he famously ran for president many, many times and never obtained the office. I understand he's also remembered in particular for uttering the phrase Kibaki Tosha in 2002. Why did he say that and what was the significance of that phrase?
This is really where Raila became known as a very strategic thinker as well as tactician. He had entered the KANU government under the then president, Daniel Arap Moi, and ended up destroying it. I mean, just by walking out with half of KANU's lieutenants and formed NDP, the National Democratic Party, which went into alliance with Kibaki's party. And in 2002, the opposition finally came together. Kibaki Tosha meant Kibaki is the person I'm endorsing him. And it was saying that we are not going to divide the opposition vote. I'm giving all of my support to Kibaki. And that is arguably how Kibaki came to power in 2002. And that's arguably how we broke the Moi dictatorship, finally, and the KANU dictatorship.
I've heard that utterance described as one of the boldest and most selfless political endorsements in Kenya's history. Do you agree with that assessment?
I would agree with that because Raila could have won himself and he didn't. He chose to endorse Kibaki and yeah, the rest is history.
Indeed. Yeah.
And very much, either way, resonant with what his father had done with the first Kenyatta.
Mm.
So refusing to take office until Kenyatta was released. So very selfless in a way.
Did Raila Odinga actually win the 2007 presidential election, Muthoni?
Well, I believe so. And most of my colleagues in the human rights community believe so. And we believe so on the basis of evidence that we compiled at the time. At the time, we had formed a coalition, Kenyans for Peace with Truth and Justice. We had the numbers. We had the figures. I believe he won. I also believe he won in 2013. I believe he won in 2018. And I actually believe he won in 2022 as well.
Well, I suppose that begs the question, Muthoni. What is to be made of the fact that Odinga, if he did win all those elections, never became president? What does it say both about the political system in Kenya, but also about Odinga?
It says about our political system that electoral rigging is very multifaceted and clever. It says that the masses of amounts of money that we've invested in electoral reforms, in the electoral body, in the cost of elections in this country, all come to naught because there is no will that cannot be subverted by people who are subverted. No people's will. About Odinga, I think it says that he has a lot more grace than people give him credit for. So a lot of people will criticize him for the Grand Coalition Government after 2007, the so-called handshake with Uhuru Kenyatta after 2018, the broad-based government with current President William Ruto. But all of these things can also be, they can be read as betrayal, of course, and many in his base, many in the intellectual circles that support him, many in the political circles that support him, we read it as betrayal, but it can also be read as grace in terms of putting the interests, the stability of the country first. I think especially Gen Z, the young protesters last year and this year, felt so violated by his entry into a pact with President Ruto. Many of them have been killed. Kids are still missing. They're just like, how could you do this? And I don't think they will forgive him for that. But as someone who has sort of knows him, not very well, but knows him, and someone who is considers myself part of the Kenyan left, I think the cost and the sort of weight that we've put on one person has been, in a way, too much. He's paid a very, very high price, and his family has paid a very, very high price. And he was elderly at this point. So I don't really blame him for being more conciliatory than people would expect. He's not, you know, a 20-year-old, 30-year-old firebrand anymore.
Looking back over such a long career, what would you say are the greatest achievements of Raila Odinga?
First and foremost, he broke the back of the ruling party that had dominated us since independence. The party was called KANU, Kenya African National Union. It had become a dictatorship under our first president, Jomo Kenyatta, our second president, Daniel Arap Moi. He broke it. And he broke it by entering it and then walking out with half of its most key lieutenants. So that's one. I think, secondly, with the Kibaki torture phrase, with the coming into power of the Rainbow Coalition, which succeeded the first ruling party, he helped bring about the restoration of multi-party politics and our what we call our second liberation. I think other than that, one of the achievements post-2002 and post-2007 was finally our new constitution was passed, very much due to the agitation of his side of the Grand Coalition government. And that constitution has been our bellwether. It has been our touchstone ever since. It has restored separation of powers. It restored sort of balance between the three arms of government. It brought about devolution, devolved government. That's an achievement, you know, no one can come fault. And I think fourthly was, you know, he became a symbol of struggle and resistance and the importance of that for so many people, for working class people, for the human rights movement, for the leftist intelligentsia. He had humor, he had style with his hats, he had his soccer jokes and his what we call vitenda wili sort of sayings and riddles and metaphors always that he used to speak about the state of Kenyan politics, Africa and the world. So he was a very likable kind of symbol, very warm as a symbol. And the last thing I would say is many people tried to reduce him to being a Luo politician. Luo is one of the nations of Kenya. But he was much more than that. He was much more than a Kenyan politician. He was a serious Pan-Africanist like his father, who knew and was interested in politics all across Africa, Africa's standing in the world. He had links with all of the progressive movements. You know, one of the things that kind of reduced me to tears was two leading opposition leaders in Uganda and Tanzania, Kizza Besigye in Uganda and Tundu Lissa Lisu in Tanzania. They are both currently detained. In the case of Besigye, he's actually under trial by a military court. And he released a statement when Riley died, and he said, "Kill me if you want, but please let me attend the funeral of my friend." Same thing with Tundu Lisa. Tundu ended up sending his deputy, and Kizza Besigye was also represented. But it shows you the warmth and the love he had and the meaning he had across the continent.
And just finally, how would you describe the state of Kenyan politics today and without Raila Odinga? Is there a successor or someone to take up his mantle?
There's no one like him. And I think we're in for a very interesting, rocky ride because careers are falling. John Githongo, one of our anti-corruption crusaders, you know, made a joke last week. He was like, "Oh my God, we're going to see a political careers collapse like ice cream in the sun." And it's true. The opposition is in for a rough ride. Ruto is our current president, President William Ruto, and arguably the agreement that he made with Raila to form what is called the broad-based government, incorporating some advisors and some ministers from ODM, from the party of Raila, into government, helped save his government in the face of widespread youth protests in 2024 and this year. And that's partly why Gen Z feels so betrayed by Raila, because they feel he saved Ruto's government from falling. I mean, as we've seen, Nepal's government fell. Yeah, that's what they wanted. So now Ruto is really out on a limb with no one. Ruto is in for a rough ride. You know, right now people are mourning, but the stabilizing force is gone and everything is going to realign.
Oh, it's been really fascinating hearing about the life and legacy of Raila Odinga today. Thank you so much for speaking with us this morning.
You're more than welcome. I hope listeners in Australia appreciate what he meant to us.
That's Dr. Muthoni Wanyeki, who is a political scientist and former executive director of the Kenyan Human Rights Commission.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.